thrilled to say we're joined by a very special guest in the studio. Singer, actor, entertainer, and also boobette. Joanna Forrest, breast cancer charity Copperfield, which is a fabulous and very, very laudable organisation, helping to raise awareness about breast cancer and its consequences, the treatment of, but most importantly, the prevention of and the detection, hence Copperfield. You're a boobette. What's a boobette?
A boobette is somebody who has either had breast cancer or has had a breast cancer scare.
Right.
And then we go and we spread the Copperfield message to check yourself to anywhere where there is young people. That could be a sixth form college. It could be a mother and baby group. Anywhere where there is the right demographic to spread the word to check yourself.
Yes, and so are you focusing on younger people? And is there a concern that young women are not checking themselves enough? Or is it across the whole population, this Copperfield campaign?
The Copperfield campaign is aimed towards younger women because it is quite unusual to get it when you're younger, but it does still happen. So everything out there is aimed for the older lady, that it's an older lady's illness.
So once you're female and you're in your 30s or 40s, you start worrying about it. You probably know someone that's had a scare and you're aware of it. Whereas actually you're just embarking on, let's say it's Freshers Week at university, you're 18 years of age. It's the last thing on your mind.
Exactly, yeah. It just might not even occur to you, and you probably definitely perhaps wouldn't be checking yourself as part of your routine.
Yes, and the problem is generally that young people feel invincible anyway, don't they? So that just adds to it. And you probably felt invincible at the point when, quite shockingly, you were diagnosed, because you were only 21.
Yes, that's right.
So you weren't expecting this. This was not on the horizon whatsoever.
No, not at all.
No, and you'd had enjoyed good health up to that point, as regular good health?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happened when you were 21, are you able to, I mean, I don't want to pry too much, but are you able to tell us your story of how it happened, how you found out, and how you thank God prevailed over it?
Yeah, so I was working at the time in a European tour called The Best of Broadway, which was like a musical review.
Sounds it. I love a best of. That's good. Yeah. Right, let's cut out the crap. Do you know what I mean? Let's cherry pick the best song. Best of Broadway.
Yeah, so...
What did that encompass? Which sort of which shows were we thinking of there? Oh,
Bit of Cats, bit of Evita.
Evita, nice. West Side Story?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, a bit of Chorus Line.
Yeah, love a bit of that. Love a bit of Marvin Hamlish.
All of the good ones.
Good.
And it was while I was on tour having like a really good time.
Were you on tour? Was this in the UK?
No, it was a European tour.
Oh, cool. So you were at like cities like Paris and other places in Europe.
Yeah.
Obviously. Cool. So it's a dream job for... Because had you been to drama school and stuff like that, or what was your education as a performer?
Well, instead of going to a normal secondary school, I went to stage school. So
which one?
Italia Conti.
Which is an iconic one, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah,
so could you tell us some of the famous people that have come from the Italia Conti? Lots of actors, no? A few people from EastEnders, maybe?
Absolutely. Well, there were people like Noel Coward and Gertrude Lawrence, like a long time ago, because Italia Conti is now over 100 years old.
Wow.
In more recent times, people like Martine McCutcheon.
Happy days. Love a bit of Martine.
Louise Redknapp.
Come on. Very sweet. She's a lovely lady. I've met her. She's very pleasant.
Yeah,
you met her?
Yeah. She was the year above me. Kelly Brook.
Whoa. And you do think of, there's a bit of a reputation for these Italia Conti, especially the actresses, of being quite pushy. And is that an unfair, you're not, thank God. And none of those people you mentioned are either. But there's that slight, the ambitious thing, because that's an ambitious world, isn't it?
It's definitely an ambitious world.
Everyone's like a rival. And,
it's hardcore.
Yeah, it's hardcore. But you survived that and you prevailed. So you came out of your, you got your all of your acting, you know, you got the certificate. I'm an actor now.
Yes.
And the special clothes they give you and all of that. And then you're on tour. So European tour, brilliant. The stuff of dreams at this age.
And then it was as if overnight, all of a sudden, there was a lump that I hadn't noticed before. Mm. And then there it was. And it was quite big.
Bloody hell.
It was really
Do you
odd.
Think it had been growing and you hadn't noticed? Or do you think it just was very swift? Or will you never know?
I think it had been growing and I hadn't noticed it, I think.
Right.
Until it till there it was. And yeah. So I remember.
Was it just visible, or could you feel it? What was the first discovery?
I wasn't checking myself because there wasn't a charity like Copperfield around at the time, so nobody had told me that's something I should be doing at all. So no, I noticed it in the mirror. I just thought, gosh, what's that? Where did that come from?
Did you immediately fear the worst?
No, not at all. I just thought it was really odd. I thought it might go away as well. I showed it to the girl who I was sharing a room with on tour, and I could tell by the expression on her face that it was a bit odd. So I made a mental note that when the tour finished and I was going to go back to the UK, that I would definitely go and see my GP and show it to him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, producer Talia, if you were to see such a thing in the mirror, would you have just waited till the end of the tour, or would you run straight to the doctor? What would you be your attitude?
I think I'm the kind of person that thinks, oh, it's probably nothing. I'm not like a hypochondriac. So my initial thought would be, I'm sure this is nothing.
Well, there's the footballer, John Hartson, who had a cancer scare, and he was playing football, and he had testicular cancer, and he just had this massive lump, around where the testes are, and he just put up with it and ignored it, and he had it for like 2 years, and it was just getting bigger and bigger, and at a certain point he's like, oh, I've had enough of this. He went to the doctor and went, well, you've properly got cancer, and thank God he survived as well, but he was very lucky. But it's amazing how there's obviously a part of human nature, especially before you've been educated, that just makes you think, I'll just get on with this. Maybe it's a survival instinct that humans have of to shrug off little injuries and things in order to just get on with it. And obviously, there were practical reasons why you couldn't just run to the doctor, I guess. You were abroad anyway.
Yeah, and there wasn't that much left of the tour, so it was only about 4 weeks till I knew I was going home.
But actually, looking back on it, 4 weeks is a long time if you've got cancer, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you put up with it. Was there any pain, or was it just this mysterious lump?
Didn't hurt at all.
Okay.
No pain.
Oh God. All right. So that's fine. So then what happened after 4 weeks?
Came home. Yeah. Went with my mum to the GP.
Did it change over the course of those 4 weeks?
No, it stayed the same. And he felt like there are so many reasons why you might have a breast lump. And so at 21, it would be very unusual for it to be breast cancer. So he kind of assured me that it would be totally fine. However, I did feel like, just because it was there and it was quite big and it was a bit odd, I thought, do you know what? I want to have this out anyway.
Yeah.
I just thought that would be like a sensible thing to do.
Yeah, because you get these things in breast tissue like cysts.
Yes.
And a cyst is a kind of... it's a composite, isn't it, of just sort of fluids and tissue, and it's a build-up of just stuff. A cyst is often completely harmless. It's just a lump, and it would look exactly like a cancerous lump, but it's just this harmless matter. And when that happens, they often say, oh, just leave it. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
So you'd been given a steer that probably it was that of that ilk.
Yes. Yes.
Harmless lump.
Yes.
But you wanted it out anyway. Thank God you wanted it out anyway.
Yeah.
Do you feel you were misdiagnosed? Or do you think, what do you think happened? Because something went wrong there, didn't it?
I feel like, yes, I think I was 21 then. I'm 36 now, so it was like a long time ago. And I think now there's so much more awareness of it happening in younger women. And I think just breast cancer, like, awareness in general seems to have absolutely in the last few years just become so much more at the forefront of kind of everybody's mind that I think it was a big shock when after I did have my the surgery to remove the lump, that when I went to get my stitches out, that's when the surgeon told me that actually that it was cancer. I think everybody was really, really surprised. But I think because I was so young, and I think because I was completely the wrong demographic, and it was just so unusual, I think that it wasn't really their fault that they didn't immediately think, oh, this is, you know, you must rush you in and have this operation.
I guess your diagnosis is only as good as the quality of current medical knowledge and thinking, I suppose. I mean, it's very hard to treat ME or things like that now. And in 100 years' time, you'll probably just give someone a course of something and bang, it'll be gone. So I suppose you're right. You can't be too harsh. It was just what it's not like the doctor wasn't using their knowledge. Clearly, you were an unlikely case for cancer,
yeah,
but you had it.
Totally unlikely.
So,
yeah.
Did you have to pay for? Was it almost like cosmetic surgery, or did you get it out on the NHS anyway?
Luckily, I had private healthcare anyway that I think
that's
covered
interesting.
It.
I'm just curious. Just would you have had that treatment? Would you have had that treatment if it was an NHS
good
thing?
Good question.
And would you have had it so quickly as well?
Probably not, because I did. I think I had it the following week or the week later. It was very quick.
Yeah. I mean, there you go. Because it was on paper, it wasn't life threatening. Because I always think that's the thing about the private versus that. I love the NHS and think we all do. But the one thing that clearly is the case with the private is that the so-called non-urgent is taken care of much more quickly.
Yeah.
And you were non-urgent. Turns out it was urgent.
Yeah.
OMG. So listen, what happened then? So you've got this diagnosis.
Yes.
Afterwards. The lump is gone. Thank God.
Yeah.
And obviously, what, as a matter of procedure, they just checked what the lump was. Was that it?
Yeah, I think they analyse all of everything they take out.
Yeah. And then, first of all, how did that news greet you? Because you're probably just recovering from this operation, still in discomfort from the operation. And then the doc comes in and just tells you.
It was really weird. My mum came with me because for support, and also because after the stitches out, maybe I didn't want to drive. And... It didn't occur to me that anything could be wrong when they took my mum into a room for ages and just kind of left me on my own. I just thought that was really weird, and I couldn't really work out what was happening.
Yeah,
I didn't know there was something else going on with my mum that she hadn't said. I was thinking, what's going on? And so they told my mum first.
Yeah.
And then they told me.
Was that the right thing to do?
I don't know. They must have thought it was the right thing to do. I think it's because I was so young at 21. Maybe they thought it was the best thing to do. I'm not sure.
Bonkers. So, all right. So that's it. So your mum, so it's probably your mum's taken, she's a bit shocked.
Poor mum, yeah.
And then she has to tell you, or did they tell you then? Who
told
you?
The surgeon told me.
All right. And how did that feel, that when that bombshell came in?
I was really, 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 really shocked. And I remember that... He told me that I'd have to have another operation to find out if it had spread. And so then I was thinking, not another operation. Because I was a bit scared about the first operation. You know, it's just not very nice, is it?
Absolutely
not.
Oh,
no, I've just, had that, and I've got to have another one. And I remember wanting to kind of be out of there and, talk to my mum about it without them there type thing.
I know. Just to actually debrief a bit and just process what you've just heard.
Yes.
I know, and not be so medical about it, because I think doctors are the most amazing profession in the world, but they can be, compared to nurses, doctors can be a bit they can be a bit flippant, and they can be a bit rational about these things. And it's funny because we want them to be uber rational. I'm very happy to have a doctor that's got zero personality but knows all the facts. But I've noticed that with my wife's pregnancies and things like that the doctors, they're efficient, but they can be a little blunt and dismissive, and then the nurses are much more engaged on a sort of human level, I think. Which is why I love the NHS, because I think it's great to have both.
I feel like he tried to be as human and nice about it as he could. Mm. And then I remember that there was this nurse who started, she put her arm around me and started rubbing my back. And I remember just thinking, I really don't want you to do that. But obviously, it's too polite to go
Yeah. Okay.
They were all trying to be very nice.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's the most amazing story. Well, we can continue the story after this and hear all about Copperfeel and this amazing organisation and what you're doing. And also want to talk about your showbiz career as well, because it's incredibly glam and very exciting. But we'll have another track. And do you know what we're going to do? We're going to have you.
That's
okay.
Exciting. Thank you. This is
Ness and Dorma, which is one of my favourite pieces of classical music. And I'm so excited that the performer, the co-performer in this piece, is with me in the studio. Tell me about this track. Where was it recorded and with whom and under what circumstances?
Well, I wanted to record this because I wanted to record it before I performed it live at the Palace Theatre, which happened last week, which was really exciting. And I just wanted to record it.
I guess because you'd rehearsed it so much, you had it completely, you've completely nailed it in preparation for this live performance. You're like, why don't I capture it forever on tape?
Yes.
Was it? What a brilliant and sensible thing to do. So you went to a studio to record it?
Yes.
Is it a solo performance? Or
it's just me with
brilliant.
the lovely Gary Hind, vocal coach on the piano.
Great. I can't wait. Well, here it is. This is the voice. You've got a beautiful spoken voice, and here's how it sounds when you put it to music. This is Joanna Forrest, Nessun Dorma on FUBAR. And every glass in the building is now shattered into 1,000 pieces. What a performance. Nessun Dorma, Joanna Forrest, that was exceptional. You're with me in the studio. What an amazing singing voice you have.
Thank you.
And I'm a big fan of Pavarotti, a total genius, but I'm going to be honest with you, I prefer that, your version, because it's a bit less...
amazing.
I know,
wow.
Because it's a bit less... he lays it on a bit with a bit of a trowel. I think he gives it some welly, but I think there's an innocence and a fragility about your interpretation of it, which is really nice.
Thank you.
Don't you think, producer Tals?
Absolutely.
So, wow, love that. Now, let's tie up our conversation about the Copperfield charity and also your story. You found a lump for cosmetic reasons and also discomfort, and who wants a lump in their body? You got it taken out. Well done. They found out it was actually malignant, so they got it out. And then what did they do? Did they zap you with chemotherapy and things, or radio, or what was your treatment after that?
The first thing they did was another operation to see whether it had spread. So they have to take out things like lymph nodes under your arms to see whether it's in there, because then possibly then it can travel all around if it's got.
What is
there.
A lymph node? Do you know what it is?
I think it's something that allows other stuff to travel around the body, because I know it's bad.
Is it like is it a gland? Is it like a gland?
So. I think so. I know I don't have any now.
But it's right. Do you? And you don't need. We also don't need them.
yeah, mustn't need them.
No, I might get my lymphs out as well. I don't like the sound. I don't want a node anywhere. It sounds a bit creepy to me. I might get everything out that I don't need. That's just is it appendix, right? Maybe I could sell one of the old kidneys and get a new couch, because I've been going to Heels. I've seen an amazing couch, but it's $2,000, which is out of my budget. Oh. Maybe it's worth it. Now, so here's the thing. So you see you had the treatment for that. They removed the lymph nodes, and then did they find that it had spread or not?
I was really lucky. It hadn't spread to the lymph nodes at all. They were all clear, and it was just like the tiniest bit around where the lump was that they could take away with the second surgery.
And that was it cells? Was it a collection of cells, essentially?
I think so, yeah.
Right. Amazing. So not overly invasive then, the treatment?
Well, then I had chemotherapy and radiotherapy after that.
Both. Now, what's worse? Chemo, I know, is I think when they an actual drug, isn't it? And the radio is radio waves.
Yes.
Which is worse, or are they appalling in different ways?
I think chemotherapy is a whole world worse. That's okay. What I found anyway.
Yeah. Is that because of things like, is it nausea and fatigue, things like that? What happens with chemo?
Well, yes, you get very tired and you feel sick and you have this horrible taste in your mouth.
Mm. So your appetite goes out the window and all your taste buds and everything are all just shot to pieces, are they?
Yeah.
And your immune system is affected, so you can pick up other illnesses when you're having the chemo, I guess.
That's right. You have to be very careful about maybe not going to places that are very maybe crowded or maybe like the tube, if you can avoid it.
Did you lose your hair or anything like that?
I was really lucky. I was told by the oncologist that I was going to lose my hair, and I think at 21, that really affects you.
Mm.
And that was like, that's such a big deal. It's like the worst news in the world, especially as like I was trying to, you know, like be a performer and
Definitely.
Make my way in that world. The last thing you want is to have no hair. So, but I was really, really, really lucky that actually it thinned and some of it came out, but it didn't go, which made such a difference to me.
Yeah. You could try to live something like a normal life. At least you weren't running around with, you know.
Yes, and also it's not. It doesn't mean that everyone else can see what you're going through as well.
I know, because you don't.
Really,
I would imagine that, because I'm just imagining that if you do have the chemo and you lose your hair, then suddenly you've got to start explaining yourself, and you get more people than that nurse rubbing you on the back. It's just like, enough already with the sympathy. Just let me be normal.
Absolutely, and I was very secretive about it. I didn't want anybody to know. It was like my thing. I just wanted it to be really, really hush hush.
Which was your?
Don't know why it was that so important to me at the time.
I think because I wonder whether it's to do with, and it's fascinating with Copperfield, which tries to focus on young people to get them to check for lumps and things and irregularities. Because I think young people, you're still defining yourself. You're defining your image in the outside world. And young people are normally always a bit more self-conscious. They're a bit more thin-skinned when it comes to criticism about their appearance. Whereas I suppose you could take someone like me. I turned 40 a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I feel like I am who I am now. And you can say what you like about me, whatever.
I feel like
but
that
maybe
now.
It's that age where you're still defining. And you probably don't want to be, you know, I'm guessing for the best will in the world, without being flippant about it, but you don't really be the kind of the cancer girl.
Well, exactly.
You know.
And I feel like now, I don't mind talking about it, because I feel like I've done so much other things.
Yeah, you're not defined by it.
Exactly, but I think at that time, you're absolutely right. I think that was a big fear of mine.
You have, by the way, I just must observe, because it's radio, but you've got the most epic hair I've ever seen. You've got the most amazing, fabulous mane, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's beautiful, stunning, sort of auburn, and loads. You've got loads of hair. It's brilliant. I love it. So clearly you physically, thank God, you fully recovered. You had all the chemo and the radio and everything, and then you just have to many, many tests, but there was no recurrence after that.
Yeah, I was really lucky.
Brilliant. And now here you are, it's 2014, and do you feel, has it changed your attitude to life? Do you live your life differently because you've had a taste of, you know, how fragile life is? Are you a bit more, you know, because a lot of us, I think, very complacent, and we think that it's all just going to last forever. And if you've had a taste of illness like that, I wonder whether it chastens you a bit.
I'm not sure. I think probably I live my life the same, really. I think probably maybe it should have given me some epiphany about life and how fragile life is. But I don't think so. Maybe I was too young for it to have really kind of registered perhaps. You still, even if something like that happens, I think you do still feel like at 21 that you are going to get through it, and that there is a lot of years left in your life to live, even if something like that has happened, I think.
And maybe it's just more subtle than that. Maybe it's just subconscious rather than a ridiculous evangelical, hey, let's do this thing. You know, maybe it's just somewhere deep inside you, that knowledge that life is fragile. And I think it's probably a very educational force, I'm sure. So Copperfeel, what's the plan? Tell me about the campaign.
Copperfeel are the most awesome charity. They strive every day to save lives by encouraging young people to check themselves. And they have saved lives.
Amazing.
Yeah, they really have. There are so many young people out there after hearing Copperfeel's message, maybe at a festival or maybe in the paper, and checking themselves, finding a lump. It's encouraged them to actually go to the GP and get it checked out. And they get messages saying that now they're checking themselves as part of their routine. Sometimes they can even say to their mum or their grandma, like, are you checking yourself? And they might be like, no. So they're even kind of passing the message up that way to, like, the older generations who really should be checking themselves.
So what's the what are the details of Copperfeel? How can people tap into this amazing charity and support it? I guess you would just probably have to Google Copperfeel, I would have thought.
Yeah, you can check out the website. There are loads of ways to get involved. You can follow them on Twitter and like the Facebook page.
Right.
If you are like a teacher or you run a mother and baby group, you can book a bubette where somebody from the charity, like myself, will come and talk about their experience and talk about the charity and hopefully educate those young people to check themselves.
It's brilliant. And just a reminder, the bubette is somebody that has had a diagnosis for breast cancer or some sort of breast cancer scare. You become a bubette. I'd love to be a bubette, but I just, you know, who knows? Because actually breast cancer does affect men as well, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So, you know, it's something that affects all of us. Everyone should worry about it. And that's why Copperfeel is so brilliant. There's a Twitter hashtag thing going on for it, which is hashtag Rethink Cancer, which is all part of this campaign by Copperfeel.
That's awesome, the Rethink Cancer. That's to try and get the signs and symptoms onto the curriculum.
Oh, really?
Yeah, isn't that a good idea? So that all young people will be educated. And that is Chris and Maren's idea. They are two identical twins who run the charity.
Yeah.
And Chris was inspired, and Maren, to start the charity when Chris was misdiagnosed when she was 23. And she just felt that it just can't happen to anybody else. So she set up the charity with her sister to make sure that it doesn't happen to anybody else and that everybody is going to get this message to check themselves.
What a legacy. Well, please do get behind it. Copperfeel, Twitter, like the Facebook page, and also via their website as well, which is fantastic and brilliant. Meanwhile, as a performer, are doing brilliantly, and there's so much happening. I want to ask you about your performance with Paul Potts.
That was so cool.
The legend that is Paul Potts.
With Paul Potts, I got to sing a duet from Phantom of the Opera. It was the most amazing thing. He is such a nice guy. Because I had the idea. So being a bubette, you go and you share your story and stuff. And then I thought, how else can I help Copperfeel? What else can I do? And I thought, I know what I can do. I can put on a show.
Brilliant.
And it was just brilliant. It was such an incredible evening. And all the performers who were involved, it was like, it was just easy for them to say yes, because once they either knew about Copperfeel or once they were told what Copperfeel stands for, they were like, absolutely get me involved. And Paul Potts was one of those people who wanted to be involved. And he sang a duet with me, which was just excellent.
So did you do Ness and Dorma? I know you did the song for The Phantom, did you say?
Yes.
Was it Phantom? Brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah, so it's the first time he hasn't sang Ness and Dorma at an event since he won Britain's Got Talent. Wow. But he thought that it was, he was like, it's fine if Joanna wants to sing it, because it was her idea and her evening. Is just such a nice man.
That's really cool.
Yeah, really cool. And I didn't meet him until the day, but I knew we were doing Point of No Return from Phantom. And so we hadn't actually rehearsed together until the sound check with the orchestra. And it was just so exciting. I was like, oh my God, I'm singing with Paul Potts. It was just incredible.
Yeah, and his story is amazing, isn't it? Because he was it Britain's Got Talent? Did he win Britain's Got Talent?
He did.
And he's just the most amazing. He's turned out to have this great talent. He's doing brilliantly, and he's a famous man now. There's a movie being made about him. James Corden, I think, is starring in a biopic of his life. Yeah. So that's quite. And you perform. And but here's the big thing. So you performed with Paul Potts, and you performed in, was it the Royal Albert Hall?
It was the Palace Theatre.
Oh, I see. So the Royal Albert Hall is. Oh no, there was it because I need to. Sorry, because I've got so many notes about this. Can you tell me about the Copperfield event at the Albert Hall? Was there an Albert Hall event as well?
No,
okay, that's fine. You know what? That's next year. Let's book the Albert Hall now.
Exactly, yeah.
Definitely. It's amazing. Oh, brilliant. And what's happening with you professionally before we let you go? I know you're a very, very busy lady. What's coming up? What are your hopes and aspirations as a performer?
Ooh, hopes and aspirations is a good one. So basically, I trained in all kind of areas of performing arts. And after Monday, I've decided I really, really want to concentrate on the singing. Obviously, I love acting and I've done a lot of acting, but I think I've discovered that it's definitely singing that gives me the most buzz and I'm most passionate about. So, and I've been trained classically, so aspirations would be to be classical crossover soprano singing with lovely orchestras, lovely events.
Yeah, and of course a Best of Broadway reunion at some point.
Yes.
There's got to be. Let's get the band back together for one last hurrah. But brilliant. Well, based on what we've just heard, your performance in Essendormer, that's a no-brainer. You're a shoo-in for global stardom. So really good luck with that. And I wonder whether in this mad world of show business, when there's so many things you can do, you know, acting, I wonder whether going narrow is actually quite good, because then you can really carve out a niche for yourself.
I think to be focused and specialised maybe is the way forward.
I think so. Well, you're specialised and special and brilliant and amazing, and so is the Copperfield campaign. Please get on it, support it, look out for the Boobettes, a fabulous cause and a fabulous guest as well. Thanks, Joanna.
Thank you.